From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. It is 7 minutes after 2 o'clock. Mike Lewis sitting in for Jack Steinden, who's taking a day off, rallying his strength for the Sweet 16. No, he doesn't care about basketball.
No, he does not.
We were kind of reveling in the Cougar win yesterday.
Yes.
First time in, 16 years the Cougars have a postseason win in some of the tournaments?
Yeah, and with Slick Watts's grandson.
Right, Isaiah Watts. Isn't that great? So, as you can tell from that, the sultry tones, right? The dulcet tones. What is, Frank Shires joins us. We're gonna customize this.
I don't know. I kind of like it.
We're gonna say Frank Shires.
Yeah,
we're gonna do that. And what I'm hoping, Frank, welcome back, by the way. What I'm hoping to talk about today is what was on everybody's lips till it was diagnosed earlier today, or revealed earlier today, that the Princess of Wales has a cancer diagnosis, which, you know, I'm not sure how it's national news, but with all respect, accordingly, I hope the best for the world.
World news.
Yeah, it's world news.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Letitia James, the New York Attorney General, and former President Donald Trump's pending, is it 455 today? Because it raises, I think, $112,000 a day in interest, the monetary fine that was put upon the former president and his business and his sons. Mm-hmm. For what they prevented evidence, and it was found by a judge in the judicial system that President Trump had committed business fraud for decades. Evidence was presented.
That's the claim.
The evidence was presented to a judge.
Summary judgment.
Summary judgment. And summary judgments are not uncommon. Summary judgments where a judge is presented with evidence from both sides.
Right.
The judge then rules that there is the preponderance of evidence.
Whoa. Wait. No. Summary judge. There was no evidence. There was
evidence. Plenty of evidence.
Yes. It's a civil trial.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the standard by which you decide guilt or innocence is?
Decided.
No. Preponderance of evidence.
Okay.
Which means he who has the most wins.
Okay, as is always the case in the civil, it's never unanimous decision.
Traffic court,
right?
And so in this particular case, what happened was Letitia James did a whole bunch of research, got all kinds of documents, and then saying this was fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump campaign or the Trump,
no difference.
Family,
you can say campaign,
right.
Family, Trump's business, campaign, all one thing.
Did not have an opportunity to provide a defense in a trial in front of a jury. That's not what happened.
Right.
What happened was Letitia James turned in the evidence. The judge looked at it and said, yep, summary judgment, it's fraud.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out how to get to this next question.
Just get to it.
Letitia James campaigned on the I'm going to get Donald Trump. We actually have that, right? This is not debatable.
Check it. Dorna? She's getting it.
It's a lot there, Nora, I know. I'll get him. Sorry, that was me.
I will never be afraid to challenge this illegitimate president. He should be charged with obstructing justice. I believe that the president of these United States can be indicted for criminal offenses.
I will be shining a bright light into every dark corner of his real estate dealings. And every dealing. Demanding truthfulness at every turn.
So, I've seen it offered 1,000 different ways from Sunday on various mm-hmm. media outlets across the spectrum.
Right.
That this is bad. Letitia James saying, I'm going to run on persecuting Donald Trump, prosecuting mm-hmm. Donald Trump.
When he was president. Understand, right. This was in 2018.
Mm-hmm.
He still had 2 more years on his term. Two more? Two and a
half? 2018.
Like
two, yeah. 2 years, yeah.
Yeah.
So and from my perspective, mm-hmm. Letitia James is the Attorney General of New York.
Right.
And Donald Trump has, at that point, mm-hmm. as a business person in New York, an entity in New York, a long track record of fraud convictions or settlements, judgments, right, of whether it be Trump U or any other contractors that he had done over the years. He had fraud in his background. Mm-hmm. She ran on eliminating fraud in business in New York.
Mm-hmm.
How's that a bad thing?
Well, I think it flew well. First of all, prosecutors, you shouldn't do that. And generally speaking, I think you'd be hard pressed to find somebody that would defend a prosecutor running to specifically go after a person. It's one thing to say I'm going to go after corruption. It's a very different thing to say I'm going to go after this person who is committing fraud. I'm going to go get him.
Mm-hmm.
That presupposes an assumption of guilt. Right.
There was an establishment of liability. I'll say civil liability because these aren't criminal cases. These are civil cases.
But in regards to how he conducted his business.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As in fraudulent behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's presupposing that was fraudulent. And it's, you know, again, never in a court of law, unless I'm mistaken, has he been found guilty of fraud before. Plenty of settlements. Not going to question that. But I don't think any jury ever came back and said, this was fraud, you owe this, here's a penalty.
Well,
I could be wrong, Mike.
But that's what the settlement prevented, right?
I mean, correct.
Right.
But that doesn't – wait, whoa. Settlements don't assume guilt.
No.
Anytime a person settles, they've settled.
No.
End of story.
No, but it's – but to your point.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be sort of like saying the man has never – will never die in a plane crash because they refuse to fly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so – talking about Trump having never had a fraud conviction, but he's settled an enormous number of things, is not necessarily exculpatory, to use the term.
Right.
It is just, I don't know. But I would also say, could I correct you on one thing you said earlier?
Please.
So the judge heard evidence from both sides. That you're factually wrong on that. The judge heard volumes from Trump's attorneys filed reams of paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
So the judge then, and the problem was, Trump's attorneys who could have pushed for a jury trial did not. They went for a jurist trial, and that was considered like illegal. Everyone's sort of like,
I'm pretty sure that's a myth, Mike.
Hold on, I know.
They had the choice.
Back to your corner. So here's what I understand to be, and if I'm wrong, again, the text line can help us out. I'm sure there are many legal experts listening at home yelling at the radio right now. 888-973-5476. The finding of liability.
Right.
There was no jury in that because the judge was shown evidence, to Mike's point. It's called a court trial.
Right, when there is no jury.
Both sides were provided evidence.
It's called a bench trial.
Both sides provided evidence to the bench trial judge, decided that there was guilt.
Uh-huh.
Then there was a trial about monetary penalty, how much penalty would be assessed based on that finding.
Again, a bench trial.
But there was no jury there because Trump's legal team had the opportunity to request a jury trial and failed to do so.
They failed to do so.
Could be mistaken about that. I'd have to go back and look, but in at least one of those two cases, once either the beginning or the end, the law really didn't give them the choice of having a jury trial.
Right. And I'm not sure how often or common it is for a judge to present evidence from both sides and issue a bench decision in that first finding of guilt, a finding of fraud.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how often that is with a jury or even a jury's ever allowed to be there.
Yeah. So I don't know. I get what you're saying about he's, you know, remains unconvicted of fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Which is true.
Now he is. Yeah, the judge said.
But I mean,
fraud.
But prior to that, I mean, there was quite a few settlements.
See, the problem I have is that, and I think this is bad for the country, frankly, and it's certainly not good for the state of New York and the business community.
How so?
When Letitia James said, "I'm going to go get him," okay, that was a landmark thing.
Mm-hmm.
We ignore it and say, oh, well, then it must be okay because he's a fraudster. No. He was a sitting president. Yes, he had a history. We've never had a prosecutor do that before.
She didn't say she's going to go get him because of his conservative viewpoints, because of his views on pro-life.
No, I didn't say that.
No, I know. I'm going to get fraud.
No, that's not what she said. She said she's going to go get his fraud.
I understand. If a candidate for attorney general says, I'm going to pursue fraud in this,
sure,
and fraud has a face and fraud has a name, which is what she did.
If she had not put the face and name on it, I would be much more comfortable.
I can respect your point of view. I see it as promises made, promises kept. You know, because this guy has, whether through settlement or any other thing, he has a history of business fraud in the city of New York. And I'm with Mike on this one. You don't settle if you've got a case, especially when you got war chests like Donald Trump has access to war chests.
What do you mean you don't settle if you don't have a case?
If you're right, you don't settle. I mean, you don't settle.
You understand what's going to happen here, don't you?
What's that?
It's going to get overturned. In appeal, either at the first level, which is less likely, but in the second level, it is going to be overturned for any number of reasons.
I'll bet you steak dinner at the house of your choosing.
That it won't?
It will not be overturned.
Oh, you are so on.
Do you
Absolutely.
Think, do you think, Mel, let's clarify, because I get in trouble when I make bets. I owe Charlie my house. I think I forget what I bet him about.
So what do we need to say about this?
So do you think the monetary number is going to be reduced? Or it's going to be dismissed altogether?
Well, I think this is,
okay.
Allow me to talk out of my whatever.
That's where I've been all day.
Yeah.
Feel free.
Do I think the monetary penalty is going to be reduced? Yes, because right now it's functioning as a barrier to appeal. And a barrier, by the way, that is way out of line with any other person has dealt with in the state of New York. Only been about 12 cases like this, and nobody has ever been nailed for $500 million.
Do you know how they came up with that figure?
I know exactly how it came up, but I still don't think it's a reasonable figure.
From what I understand, it's the ill-gotten gains of fraudulent activity.
Right.
If you steal $100 and bet it and win $100,000, they want the whole $100,000.
But here's the problem.
Right? So the number is valid based on evidence, giving the money he earned, the Trump organization earned, through fraudulent business practices.
Fine. Who is the victim?
Who is the victim here?
Who was the victim?
The victim is either the banks who did business.
Well, stop.
No. Let me finish your question.
Sure.
The banks who did business with Trump.
Right.
Gave him beneficial interest rates.
Okay. Who's the victim?
The bank who didn't get the proper amount of interest income because he got interest rates lower than he deserved based on fraudulent representations of his real estate holdings. There's a victim there.
Okay.
The bank made money. They should have and could have made more money. Uh-huh. So the bank makes less money. The bank pays less taxes. Mm-hmm. So the citizens of New York are the victims. The business that Trump frauded is the victim. The citizens of New York who should be benefiting from taxation on that business that was frauded are also victims.
That's a logical argument that I can't disagree with. I will just answer by saying in the record of the trial, there is no victim.
Well, yeah, but this is the face of New York real estate by his own exclamation for decades.
Doesn't matter.
It's a big settlement.
And that's why there will be an appeal, because there is no victim per se. The banks in testimony, Mike, I'm sure probably knows this. The bank said, no, we don't have a problem. We love doing business with him. We made a whole bunch of money. He paid back the money in whole. They did their own due diligence, which is what was necessary. He didn't get to, fake them into
They didn't go to Trump Tower with a measuring tape to make sure a 10,000 square foot wasn't 30,000 square foot.
Different thing.
It's not. He misrepresented he barred against the shape, the size of his domicile in New York in Trump Tower. He misrepresented.
Name the victim.
Again, the bank who didn't get the interest money they were due.
But that's not, I get your point, but that's not a legal standard.
That when there's not a, generally speaking,
if you're breaking
a civil trial,
if you break a law.
It's not a criminal matter.
There's no victim if you break, if I drive 70.
Are you claiming that this was, Trump's fraud was a victimless crime?
You are.
I'm saying given the facts of this case. Okay, there was no victim. It was never presented. None of the banks, no one that was involved with the loan said, we have been wronged, we have been victimized, we have been treated criminally. It just didn't exist.
So the victim in this case, as I understand it, at least it's been explained to me, is that there is a certain set of regulations proposed or rather implemented by governments. And if you step outside those, even if you can't name
A harmed party.
The harmed party is actually the law itself and the government, and then by extension us. So it's not necessary to prove. This is not like a class action suit, right? Where you need to have victims.
This is like the Boeing thing.
And the victims actually have to have standing. Mm-hmm. That's a different legal standard.
Right.
In this particular case, what they're doing and not naming a victim is probably more standard than you realize. So I'm not sure I get what you're saying, that you don't feel like there's a victim, and they clearly didn't say let me delineate the victims in this. But there's this larger idea about the law exists, following the law exists. Now, whether or not this was compliant banks and compliant Trump and all of that along, I actually made the argument earlier that but overvaluing property. There are people listening right now who have overvalued property in terms of getting a second mortgage.
Everybody does.
My point is, and again, because it's widely done does not mean that it's legal, right?
If you speed down I-5 at 100 miles an hour but don't hit anybody,
Sure.
There's no victim
but
here.
But the argument that, well,
everybody does it. Should we take the laws off the book?
Yeah, well, the argument would be that, yes, in this particular case, there are certainly legal experts who say the New York law is relatively questionable and the application of it in this case is pretty questionable. Sure. Yes, of course.
Do you think the settlement of him being required to put up the bond is unconstitutional, as the former president's claiming?
Oh, that has to do with the right to appeal. And
he is already appealing.
Right.
He's allowed. The former president has said they're keeping me from appealing, which is not the case.
There is no right to appeal in the U.S. Constitution. There is a right to appeal in the New York Constitution.
And he has already started his appeal process. They also require that you have to put up the amount of fine while you appeal. Uh-huh. So that way, to not just drag things out for
years.
What he's
trying to avoid, and I don't blame him, is that he's trying to avoid having that money or that amount of stuff confiscated by Letitia James. That's what he's trying to avoid, understanding that, you know, he'd like to hang on to that stuff until the appeal process is finished.
You or I wouldn't be able to avail ourselves of that kind of a
You and I
gift.
Would never get hit with that kind
I think,
of a fine.
If it were a million, I had to sell my house
to put
that up.
He offered $100 million and Engeron said no.
Because he owes more than four times that.
He said offered $100 million, and I think there was going to be some kind of a lien or something on his property.
I think what he obviously doesn't want his properties confiscated.
Correct.
What he's actually really trying to avoid at this point is the interest he pay on the bond. There's a fee. It's no different than a bail bond.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's $112,000 a day.
He's not. I don't think he's anticipating that all this is going to be confiscated. But that is the big stick in the room.
Sure.
What he's trying to avoid is just to have that extra money, whatever it is. And I don't know what the percentage is, but I know it's relatively expensive to post one of these bonds.
120% of the settlement.
Yeah, so he is trying to avoid. That's what he's actually trying to. At this point, that's what he's trying to avoid. Sure enough, if it gets to confiscating property, he's going to certainly try to avoid that. But I think in the short term, what he really wants is just not to have to pay the fee for this.
Yeah, bond. Yeah.
Do you? I appreciate your sitting here and
no, it's
discussing
okay.
this. Well, no, it's good. I think it's good. Anything you'd like to say toward this subject that we haven't given an opportunity to? Or
well, let me think. I just think what I said at the beginning was I think we got a problem with Letitia James saying we're going to go get him.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it is, given the procedure of the court, you found a sympathetic judge who looked at the evidence she presented and the response, okay, from the Trump people, found him guilty, then held this next bench trial to determine how much he should pay. And then he hits him with this extraordinary judgment, right? I just think way over the line, not reasonable, probably will get overturned.
Are those the reasons you think it's going to be overturned on appeal?
Attorney.
Do you guys bet in steakhouse or not? I want to hear
it. The understanding is if it's ever overturned,
If they lower the number,
yeah,
we're having burgers. If they dismiss it, if they dismiss it completely, we're having steak.
Okay,
is that fair?
Absolutely.
Is that what you? Because I thought you were putting forth.
No, I think
dismiss
that's
it. You think they're going to dismiss it completely?
I'm going to get a really good burger.
I'm going to get a great steak. It's going to be awesome. Frank Shires, thank you so much
thanks,
for coming
guys.
In. I appreciate your point of view.
Thank you, Frank.
There's so much stuff we didn't get to because you let me dive deep into that, and I appreciate you doing that. We'll be right back right after these. Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Mike Lewis sitting in today. I appreciate your being here, my friend. And you are Employee of the Week.
I am Employee of the Week.
Employee of the Week.
Nice.
Because
how did I get it?
You brought this story to my attention, and now we'll bring it to yours here at home. In Missouri, in the beautiful town of Maysville, Missouri, population 1,100, high schoolers are taking a class that I think any kid would benefit from. Mike, when I went to high school, we had shop.
Right.
We had a foundry, metal shop. We had home ec.
Right.
I learned how to bake.
Right.
I learned how to, you know, what cleaning products are.
Or maybe how to balance a checkbook to the extent you even need to anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Or anyone even knows how to write a check anymore.
And I've often seen, like, you know, what we're teaching kids in high school. We can all debate curriculum and DEIs or whatever, CRTs. But kids don't understand how to navigate the real world. And it's often been put out there that, you know, we should teach kids how to do your taxes, how to balance a checkbook. How to open a loan.
Right.
How to clean, how to cook, how to survive.
What the term compounding interest means.
Yeah, right. No, because my kid just got into college and flooded with credit card offers.
Right.
And I know from personal experience, my kid did not get financial, elementary financial education in high school. And that's right. not why they're going to school. They're not doing a business degree. They're doing a theater degree, which right. means I'm living in my basement for the next 10 years. But in Maysville, Missouri, tell the folks about this class offered to the students of Maysville.
So in Maysville, Missouri, and I guess I cannot see this ever happening in perhaps in Seattle Unified School District.
Eastern Washington, though.
Eastern Washington, yeah. you could, yeah. conceivably. Honestly, it should happen everywhere, or at least be an elective. Mm-hmm. I'm not necessarily thinking, but here's the class. So there, kids are not taught. It's not a class for hunters, necessarily. It is a class that, because there's a lot of, I mean, there's states where deer hunting is so popular, you get a day off from school for the beginning of deer season. Pennsylvania, you do. I think in Missouri, you do. There's other states where you do as well. That they're teaching kids, even kids who don't hunt, how to actually fully dress an animal. So how to pluck a chicken, you know, boil it, get the feathers off, remove the organs, cut the feet off, and actually then turn that into a meal.
Yep.
Same with deer. I don't know if they're doing it with pigs as well. And I was reading this story. It's a terrific story in the New York Times. And the kids, the great thing is, like, some of the pictures are pretty funny because some of the kids are pretty squeamish about this because there is a disconnect, and this is why the class is important. There is a strong disconnect between what we're eating and how it gets there. And I think that this is not, if you are a vegetarian, and a lot of my diet is purely vegetarian. Every now and then I lapse, and I lapse happily. But I would say that, like, not knowing where your food is coming from, and then also not even knowing how to prepare it, I think is a real liability. Knowing that and seeing this is not an advocacy for a meat-based diet. What it is like, this is the way the process should happen, is in small quantities, you know, handled like this, not factory farms and not the way, you know, you get your stuff from, let's just say, Tyson. The fact that people think that their food comes from a drive-thru, that meat comes from, you know, Safeway.
Even the grocery store, right. People have no idea what the process involved.
And I think actually knowing these things gives you an additional respect for how you're, and then also gives you a chance to make a decision. If you decide that, hey, I'm not comfortable with this. This used to be, you know, a deer walking around in the woods somewhere. I'd rather not do that. Fair enough. I still think you should know where the food comes from. If you are a kid who actually doesn't mind that at all, or parents who don't mind that at all, then great. Then now your kid actually has something where they are a little bit more connected to the process of getting food in front of them. That doesn't mean they need to become a deer hunter, and it doesn't mean that they need to know how to, they're going to be in some sort of, you
kill
know,
everything you
post-apocalyptic
right,
world right, right. Where they're going to be right. the one dressing the meat. It just means that they're going to actually know from whence it came. And I think that is actually, we teach very little of that in school. And I think shop is another example of, like, these practical applications, things you cannot outsource. Although we do outsource a lot of our food production. I think that this class is great. I think that this is an idea that this idea and comparable ones should return to schools, the wood shop, all of that sort right. of stuff, the stuff that you could actually, a practical application.
Well, there was a real turn toward higher education. That was the only ticket to success in this country
right.
was to get a college degree. I remember the ad campaigns on TV when I was a younger guy, you know, Lincoln in classroom. You ain't going nowhere without that sheepskin fella, you know, those kind of classes.
Right.
There has been a swing of the pendulum back to the trades,
right.
back to labor itself, and shooting it, you know, hunting a deer and knowing how to process, how to dress an animal,
right?
How to process food, how to go from field to table.
How to do it with a salmon. I mean, you know, how to do this kind of stuff. And this is not stuff I grew up knowing how to do. I mean, I went hunting a couple of times with my dad and uncle and their buddies.
Exact same boat for me.
And I am a miserable shot. And not only that, the fact is I just kept the safety on the shotgun almost the entire time. I did manage to get like one cottontail.
It was a nice walk in the woods for
it
you.
It was a nice walk in the woods for me.
For me
I did happily, though, those guys all knew how to dress an animal and cook. And I happily ate pheasant that night. I just didn't happen to be responsible for killing any of that pheasant. I do think, and that's the other thing about this. They're not just showing kids how to do this. They're also, they take that food then, days later, and they actually create a meal with it. And they show them actually how to cook something yeah. as well. And I think that these are, I mean, they may sound like tiny things, but I would have taken a class in this, absolutely, in high school.
Now, Nora, I know that you are a vegetarian or vegan?
I'm a vegan.
Vegan. You obviously would opt out of this class, take a gardening class, I guess, and the same thing, right? Same kind of process, but do it with carrots and cabbage.
Yeah.
About right? Do you think this is good for kids to know where their food comes from? You think it would be beneficial if kids maybe not go hunting in the woods and dress a field animal, but go to a processing plant, or have the option to go, or be instructed on how processed food, you know, agriculture, the industry of ag in America, kids should be shown that, to give them, like Mike said, give them a choice.
Yeah, I mean, I totally am with you on that. I feel like there's a huge disconnect between like where your food comes from, and yeah, like there's no connection to like the local, like we talk about like eating local, but like, do we really know what that means? And like,
right.
Yeah.
And these kids that are cooking deer or grouse or whatever it is, that's the healthiest lunch that's gone across that cafeteria in a decade. I mean, what we're putting in front of our kids these days in cafeteria food is that's criminal.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that has never been my issue with like, when I make a decision about being a vegetarian, that's not necessarily, and I'm not consistently in any way.
But you make a pretty conscious regular decision.
But I make a decision to minimize.
Yeah.
And the part of the reason to minimize is not because I am particularly, making a decision to be a vegetarian isn't always necessarily a healthy decision because there's so much processed vegetarian food. I mean, those fake chicken nuggets or chicken patties make a sandwich out of are not.
Impossible Burger thing meaties, those, yeah.
Impossible Burgers are not better for you than beef. They're better for you ethically if you're worried about killing an animal. I'm on board. But if you're worried about health, it's not better from a health standpoint. But I do like the idea of people. You want to watch? You want to change how you feel about food? Go look at the underground footage of what it's like in a Tyson chicken plant.
Oh yeah, processing plants for chicken. You'll never eat chicken again.
Or any pork plant. Or any place that's rendering cattle, not in a small way, but in some sort of like a McDonald's grade way. It's appalling, right? It's appalling. And
not to mention the environmental impacts of factory farming.
All of it. I'm not suggesting that this is going to change any kid's mind, but it is actually going to create a little bit of awareness that, hey, that thing that we just got in the drive-thru actually had a process leading up to us getting this, and maybe we should know about that process.
And even if it doesn't change somebody's mind, it should at least give them the option.
Absolutely.
To make an informed, intelligent decision. There you go. All right. When we come back, let's see, what did we get for the last story of the day? What did we settle on? Did we settle on anything? I don't know if we did or not. The Mark Twain Prize, the most coveted and the highest award in comedy, is being given to a recipient, and I'm not sure I agree with this, and we'll get your take on this. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. I'm Spike O'Neill. Jack Stein taking a day today to just recover, rest, recuperate. Mike Lewis is sitting in with us today. Great job.
Was it a particularly grueling show yesterday?
Yeah. No, I think the week has been a bit of taxing. Yeah. You know, the news we deal with on a daily basis can be really overwhelming when it's your job to read up and try to learn a little bit about everything.
Doom scrolling. That's the job.
And we try to find lighter aspects of things and try to look at the news on this show. We try to have solution-oriented discussions instead of blame-oriented discussions, unlike what I tried to do with Frank Joyner there. He did a nice job fending off my accusations. So we're looking for lighter stories. We find this one. The Mark Twain Prize for Humor in America began in 1998. It's an award presented at the Kennedy Center every year, and they honor the greats of American comedy. And I saw this year's recipient, and I was I don't know if I agree with it. And we're talking about people like Carl Reiner, Richard Pryor, Jonathan Winters, I mean, Bob Newhart, some of the greats of American comedy, George Carlin, you name it, Neil Simon, Billy Crystal. By the way, Bill Cosby won the award in 2009. It was rescinded in 2018. Bill Cosby, yeah. And this year's award, not this year's winner of the Mark Twain Prize, is Kevin Hart. And when I first heard this, and I like Kevin Hart. I've met Kevin Hart when we were doing the morning show with Bob Rivers. Kevin was a touring comedian back in the 2000s and came through the station. Was wonderful, engaging. We had a great time. He was funny as all get out. Saw that show that night. Great comedian. But I don't know. Mark Twain Prize for an American comedy icon? Kevin Hart?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think Kevin Hart is. He's funny.
He's
funnier sort of as an actor frequently than he is actually as a stand-up guy. I wouldn't put him in that category. So for me, part of the big recipe on comedy is surprise, right? When you do not see it coming.
That's, yeah.
And with Kevin Hart, it's, you see it coming a mile. It's like a plane on slow approach to an airport. Like it even though he'll land the joke successfully.
Yeah.
I mean, he will 100% of the time. You still just like, I know what's coming. I know what's coming. Oh, that's what's coming. Yeah. Ha. You know, and you're laughing. And sometimes because everyone around you is laughing more than because you find it him particularly inventive or. So, I mean, I'm not offended that he's getting it. Happy.
I think less about the award.
He's an interesting businessman. He's a smart dude.
I mean.
But I wouldn't put him in my.
Is it the cashback award? Does the credit card he endorses sponsor this award this year? Is that why he's back? Because I see the guy more on commercials than I do in film or on TV.
I don't know why him of all the people. Why Kevin Hart?
We have the joke that won him the award. No, I'm kidding. We just have a random grab guy.
I mean, it'll register once that time comes. It's a big honor. It's great company to be in. You know, it's humbling. So anytime somebody is giving you an opportunity to just be acknowledged in the work that you've done, it's extremely humbling. I'll just leave it there.
Like I said, not funny. I'm sorry. That joke didn't land. That wasn't a joke. That wasn't funny what I just tried to do. It doesn't always work.
It doesn't always work. Yeah, it doesn't always work. I don't know. So who would you say?
If I had to say my all-time favorite comedian is, it's hard to say because different things made me laugh at different times.
Right.
I've always been a fan of Richard Pryor.
Yeah, I've been
raised on Richard Pryor comedy. Right. I'm a fan of Cheech and Chong. You know,
I was just talking about them the other day.
I'm a fan of George Carlin. More modernly, I love Jon Stewart's comedy.
Yeah.
I love Colbert's comedy when he was a correspondent of The Daily Show. Some of the funny stuff when he was, the Colbert, the conservative, lashing out of conservatism through the eyes of an overbearing a caricature of conservatism. That was great fun. Will Ferrell, to me, is wonderful.
Will Ferrell's great.
Who do you think?
I'd have to put a few people for stand-up specifically.
Stand-up, okay, yeah.
For stand-up specifically, I'd probably go Bill Burr.
I love Bill Burr.
Bill Burr is...
Caustic as all get out. Not for everybody.
Kind of ridiculous, but he's very, very funny. I would say Bill Hicks, who's now dead, died of pancreatic cancer. But I thought he was way out there on the edge and liked him a lot. I would put Richard Pryor in that category. Janine Garofalo. Like, listen to her live. She is, like, whip smart. And she's doing this thing where, like... The punchline sometimes is just funny between her and one other person out there, but she's like, she raises the level. I think she is an underappreciated kind of master of the genre. And I would say, well, for weird,
yeah,
and I kind of like weird, Stephen Wright.
Oh, Stephen Wright's
Stephen
brilliant.
Stephen Wright, when he...
Brilliant. Mitch Hedberg, same vein, right?
Mitch Hedberg's exactly the same
right,
vein.
Right, when I won 10,000 or something.
It, weirdly enough, was kind of a golden age of comedy. A lot of comedy clubs when I was young and in college. It's kind of made a comeback. Like, there's a lot of good comedy out there and a lot of very creative people.
Nate Bergazzi.
Yep.
Hosted Saturday Night a couple weeks ago. To that end, we'll say congratulations to Kevin Hart. He is a lot of people's cup of tea, and comedy is subjective. Okay, Mike Lewis, A+ today, my friend.
Yeah,
great job. Andrew, A+. Nate Connors, I knew you. Jack took a day off, so you dressed like a slob. Way to go. Way to lean into your vacation day dressing-wise. Nora, great job.
Nora, thank you very much.
I'm giving myself a solid D- today because the rust was apparent.
Yeah, but don't worry. With great inflation, that'll be an A by tomorrow.
Here's now is your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Aisles with arrows going down, which way you could go, no more than one person in an aisle at a time. You know, it was dangerous.
Can we just pause on that for a moment?
Yeah.
I miss that. I miss the... I miss like directional guidelines in supermarkets.
Your 6 feet buffer.
I miss that fiercely.